This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. After Richard Grasso was forced out as chairman of the New York Stock Exchange late last week, the directors quickly settled on an interim replacement over the weekend. John Reed, a former chief executive of Citicorp, will lead the big board on a temporary basis, and after all of the outrage over Grasso's millions, every news story prominently mentions that Reed will be working for a dollar a year. And while Mr. Grasso has taken the fall, it is far from clear that he is the only culprit or even chiefly to blame. After all, the board of directors voted to approve what turned out to be a scandalously large compensation package, and Grasso can hardly be blamed for the conflict of interest that was built into his job. The chairman is expected to run both the world's most important financial market and to regulate it as well. And while Grasso's resignation may quiet the salary controversy, resolving the conflict of interest is just one of many problems, and there are many proposed reforms to deal with them. Critics complain about walls of secrecy and what many say are outdated trading methods. Later in this program, Nina Totenberg will join us for a preview of this afternoon's hearing on the California recall election and your letters. But first, the future of the New York Stock Exchange. With so many Americans invested directly or through retirement plans, why does the chairman of the stock exchange matter? If you have questions about which reforms seem sound or if you're concerned about the credibility of the market, give us a phone call. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us now from member station KQED in San Francisco is Bill George. He's a former CEO of Medtronic, which is a medical technology company, and he sits on the boards of several companies, including Goldman Sachs, Novartis, and Target. He's written a book called Authentic Leadership, Rediscovering the Secrets to Creating Lasting Value, and it's good of you to join us on Talk of the Nation today.
Good to be here, Neil.
First of all, tell us a little bit about who John Reed is, the person now appointed to head up the stock exchange on an interim basis.
Well, John Reed is an outstanding choice. He's had a great background in banking, came up through Citicorp for many, many years, was mentored by Walt Wriston, one of the gods of Wall Street, and knows the business inside out. He has an outstanding technical background, and he's totally independent. He has no ties to the New York Stock Exchange or to the board, and I think he'll bring a real sense of integrity and authenticity to this job. And it is going to be a very tough job because there are a lot of issues there.
To an outsider, the guy who's the former head of Citicorp doesn't sound like much of an outsider.
Well, he's not served on the board, and here we have a 27-person board with a lot of issues and a lot of conflict, shall we say. And I think he's been out of the business now for 3 years, and he's, I guess you'd call an insider's outsider, an outsider's insider.
Now, what is his mandate going to be?
Well, I think the first thing to do is to clean up the governance. This whole situation with Mr. Grasso's compensation has revealed severe fault lines in New York Stock Exchange governance. And until the governance gets right, I don't think anything else will be right. They have a real problem with transparency. They have a problem with independence. And I think they have a particular problem by being the leaders in setting the rules for all of us who are listed on the New York Stock Exchange, all the corporations on the board I've served and Medtronic. We're all listed, and we had clear rules to follow, which I think were very good rules about publishing everyone's salary, revealing all kinds of things in our proxy statements. And yet the New York Stock Exchange board does not follow that same set of governance principles. And I think that's a big reason they got in trouble.
So did he address that when at his news conference yesterday on the telephone from that mid-Atlantic island announcing his appointment, John Reed said, quote, this is all about corporate governance. Is it? Is that right?
Oh, I think it is all about corporate governance. And let's start with the size of the board, Neil. Can you have a 27-person board? I think that's way too big. It becomes a representative board. And the key to making a board work is the directors must accept the fact that they are ultimately responsible for the institution, and their job is to preserve and build that institution. And sometimes when you have such a large board, the individual directors don't feel responsible for what's going on, and they defer everything to the CEO, which is what I think happened here.
And what about the people who voted the scandalous money to Richard Grasso? I mean, they're all on that board too, aren't they?
They are on that board, and I think there's going to have to be some tough questions raised there, again, in looking at the various issues and conflicts that board members have and how much information the board members had when they voted about these pay package and its size, or was it an after-the-fact kind of deal? And I think But you know what happens, Neil, is when you have such large pay packages, it really breaches the trust with everyone involved. All the stakeholders of an organization really start to say, whoa, what's going on here? Is there an inside deal?
If you have questions about proposed reforms at the New York Stock Exchange, what should be done, and whether what's happened there over the past couple of weeks, and yes, it does come after a bunch of other scandals that seem to have affected America's financial markets, give us a phone call. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. And Bill George, as we look at this, it does come after a number of other scandals. Other than that, why does the chairman of the New York Stock Exchange, why does that particular position, why does that matter? Why is it on the front page of every newspaper in the country this morning?
Because they set the standard for the world. I've been teaching in Switzerland, and they set the standard for the Europeans as well. New York Stock Exchange is extremely important to the trust we have in the whole system of capitalism. And if we lose that trust, I think there could be real difficulty. So that's why we're at such a crucial point right now, where the NYSE needs to reform itself before the government steps in and has to reform them for themselves.
Mm-hmm. And when you talk about the governance issue, is that really what we're also referring to as this conflict of interest, where you know the New York Stock Exchange both sets up the marketplace and acts as a regulator?
Absolutely. One of the policies NYSE set up for all of us corporations is that we had to have a majority of independent directors. I'd like to see the New York Stock Exchange have a majority of independent directors, because people are placed in an inherent position of conflict, and that's a difficult situation. Now, I have to say, Neil, the board in the end stepped up and did the right thing and placed the institution above the individual and realized that what was at stake here. But now I think they have to take the next steps and really rethink the leadership. Should you split the chairman and CEO roles, or should they even go one step further and split the regulatory role of the stock exchange away from the trading role, like the NASDAQ has done? I'm not necessarily advocating that, but I think there has to be real consideration of the leadership of this organization and whether they want to have a combined chair and CEO. Personally, I'd like to see it split.
Mm-hmm. And when you talk about transparency, that's what other people refer to as secrecy. What should be open and what should be closed?
Yes, exactly. Certainly all the compensation should be open, but I think the way the stock exchange works and how things operate needs to be much more open to people, just like we in the corporate world have to be more open these days. Transparency is a good thing because it increases the trust of all your constituents and lets people know that things are working above board, and there's no reason to fear transparency.
There's some who are talking about the stock exchange taking itself public, an IPO. The big board would sell shares in itself. Is that a possible option?
I worry about that. I worry about organizations that have a responsibility to the public going public, that they become more concerned with short-term stock prices and shareholder value than they do their responsibility to the public. And I think that's how Arthur Andersen, you know, got off track by being too concerned about generating revenues. And I would worry about the stock exchange if they went public. I think if that happened, it would be likely we'd see the SEC or someone step in and insist that the regulatory role be split off.
Mm-hmm. At what point did it become blindingly obvious, and was it only really last week, that this was such a problem? After all, the New York Stock Exchange, as you point out, has been a model for every other exchange everywhere around the world for a very good reason. It's been hugely successful.
Well, I think it became obvious when this number, $140 million, came on the table. Because it didn't come about through stock gains. I mean, people have earned that kind of money, but normally because their stock goes up by a factor of 50 times. These were cash settlements, and Dick Grasso did an excellent job, but just the amount of money when a person's in a position of public trust was a shocking number.
Here's a good email question from someone who's asked to keep his name quiet because he's listening at work. What is the business model of the New York Stock Exchange? Where do they get revenue, especially so much revenue that they can afford to pay their CEO millions a year in annual compensation? What are their annual revenues and annual expenditures?
I think their annual revenues are around $1.1 billion. Last year they earned $28 million. It was down from $80 million a couple years before. But those numbers are not large in the business world. They generate revenues from their members, from people being listed on the exchange, from the specialists who have seats on the exchange. So there are many ways they generate revenues. They have a sound business model, and it's worked well for them. But just this amount of money of compensation needs to be looked at. But that really comes after getting the governance in line. But both do need to be looked at, Neil.
Okay. Now, the bureaucracy there on Wall Street after so many years is fairly well entrenched, not going to be very receptive to change. How likely is it, do you think, that any of the profound reforms that people are talking about are going to go through?
I think that the heads of the major Wall Street institutions want to see this take a hard look at it. They don't want too much change because you want stability in the exchange. And someone recommended the whole board step aside. I think that could be a disaster because you need some continuity there. Maybe some board members will not continue to serve. There's been some issues floated. One proposal would have the heads of the investment banks act as members of an advisory board rather than actually serving on the board. But I do think the heads of the institutions are deeply embarrassed by this, and they want to see it stabilized, and they want to see it brought back to a solid exchange that can operate. It's very much in the national interest and very much in their interest. They don't want all these conflicts of interest.
Going back to the emailer's question from just a moment ago, is the stock exchange set up as a for-profit corporation at the moment, or is it not-for-profit? What's its structure?
I believe it's not-for-profit. But it has a certain amount of, excess of income over expenses that you use to finance the exchange.
Okay. Now, the NASDAQ, which is the other big exchange in New York, heavily weighted towards some of the more technological companies, as we remember all the way until it crashed a while ago. But anyway, they had similar governance problems back in the 90s. They decided to split the functions. Tell us about how that happened and whether that has worked.
Well, they have, of course, the trading function, NASDAQ, and then they have the regulatory function, NASD, which operates as a quasi-public, quasi-private institution. And that's worked quite well for them. They tend to do more electronic trading, whereas the NYSE has the specialist system. And I think that is one of the considerations, whether they should split or not. And I'm sure John Reed will be taking up that issue, whether it would be best interest to keep it together or split up those functions. And I'm quite sure those discussions will be held with Bill Donaldson at the SEC as well.
And this is an issue we're going to get into more later. But looking ahead towards a more perhaps electronic marketplace, perhaps a little bit more along the lines of what NASDAQ does now, are the way things are done on Wall Street, are they likely to change in the near future?
Oh, I think they're changing rapidly, and obviously electronic exchanges have a big impact. The SEC is looking into this specifically. What is the best system, and is it more important to get timing or best price? And so I think we'll see Wall Street continue to go through a period of change. But while it goes through that change, we need stability at the head of the New York Stock Exchange. That's why putting John Reed in place was so important. He is, in my definition, what I call an authentic leader, someone who is very true to his values and who represents the trust, the public trust. And what we can't have is a breach of the public trust, because what happens then, Neil, is investors pull back. The small investors pull back, the foreign investors pull back, and even large institutions get very squeamish about being fully invested in equities. And that really damages the system of capitalism. So trust is everything here. And I think the important things for the board members of this institution to recognize is they are the trustees of the public trust, if you will, and they need to step up to that, and I think they have stepped up to it. I just wish it happened sooner.
One real quick email question from Stephen Schmidt in San Rafael, California, who has never heard explained, was the $148 million given to Grasso one payment, or was it accrued in retirement payments slowly over his entire 35 years of working for the stock exchange?
It was actually a single payment, as I understand it, and there are some additional payments due to him through 2007, because that's when they renewed his contract to run to. And so it was single payment, and that's why it was such a shocking figure to everyone.
We'll talk more about the future of the New York Stock Exchange, about possible reforms, that following Richard Grasso's resignation last week, and we'll take more of your calls. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and our email address is totn@npr.org. Bill George will be with us. He's a former CEO of Medtronic. His book is called Authentic Leadership. And we'll be back after a short break. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing the New York Stock Exchange and whether significant changes in how it operates may be in the offing following Richard Grasso's forced resignation last week. Our guest is Bill George, a former CEO of Medtronic, the author of Authentic Leadership, Rediscovering the Secrets to Creating Lasting Value. And joining us now here in Studio 3A with some historical perspective is Howard Wachtel. He's an economics professor at American University, the author of Street of Dreams, Boulevard of Broken Hearts, Wall Street's First Century, and he's with us in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for coming in.
Good afternoon.
Howard, where does this conflict of interest date back to? Was this inherent from the very earliest days of the New York Stock Exchange?
Absolutely. 1790 is where it begins, which is the embryonic form of the first stock exchange. After a small speculative crisis and a bubble bursting in New York City at that time, when the nation was just being started, there was a panic on Wall Street. Actually, the perpetrators at that time, fortunately, were thrown in jail because mobs wanted to hang them. And in response to that, the state legislature of New York was considering banning all brokering, buying and selling of paper. You could buy and sell tangible assets, furs, slaves, whatever, but not paper. And in response to that, 24 brokers, some of estimable character, some of inestimable character, got together and formulated an argument that said, we will set up a private, self-regulating membership organization which will regulate the brokering and essentially assign fidelity and trust to it, and therefore we don't need regulation. And that legal principle prevailed until 1934, when the Securities and Exchange Commission came in and produced, again after a debate, whether to have the government independently regulate the exchange or to have nothing, which the New York Stock Exchange preferred at that time, to keep it as it was, came up with a compromise in which each would have some regulatory authority. And therefore, there was formally, by statute, regulatory authority vested in the New York Stock Exchange in 1934, and here we are today.
Mm-hmm. So that this there's been, to some degree, overlapping responsibilities there for all these years since the SEC came into effect?
For about 70 years, that's correct.
Now, given the ability and the inclination of the Stock Exchange to resist reform, and it certainly has over all those years, what do you think the reaction is going to be with Mr. Reed's appointment? And is this going to be the clarion call to, well, it's time we modernize all these things?
Resist reform, I think, will be essentially the major claim of the New York Stock Exchange. So it depends whether or not the external pressures are great enough. There obviously are some internal pressures. But on the other hand, three months ago, none of this was being discussed in any serious way. It was only the public exposure of Grasso's salary and the ultimate embarrassment of all that, and opening up this whole question about how the New York Stock Exchange is governed. So without external pressure, whether from the SEC, the Congress, the media, more investigations and so forth, and as in all these stories, one is waiting for the next shoe to drop. Is there another shoe that will drop? And does the story have legs in journalistic circles, and will it continue to be a public debate?
Let's get a listener involved, and Tony joins us on the line from St. Louis.
Good day. I was wondering how one actually got on the Board of Governors. I assume one had to buy one's way on, and because to be a specialist on the floor, the last I heard, it cost $1.5 million. And I might also add that Martha Stewart, I was for her until I heard she was on the board, in which case I think she should do a couple months in Club Fed.
Well, perhaps fortunately for her, that decision is not up to you, Tony, unless you know something that we don't about.
Well, you get on the board by being appointed to it. And I would just raise this question. So much is made, well, let's have independent directors, as in the corporate governing world. Well, Enron was covered by independent directors. WorldCom was covered by independent directors. So that's a cosmetic change. It's not a structural change to bring the New York Stock Exchange in line with all the other corporations in America in this decade that have fallen into disrepute. So that's the issue. Will they really tackle the structural changes that are needed rather than dealing, I think, with what they probably will do is add what for me will be more superficial changes.
Bill George, let's bring you in on this.
Actually, I think the independent directors, Howard, is much more significant than that. And I think that some of them are independent, like Madeleine Albright, but many of them are not. You remember the controversy over Sandy Weill's appointment as a public representative. I think they need to be much more judicious about that, just like corporations have since we defined the rules of independence. And every board I serve on, we're looking very hard at what is truly an independent director. And I think the stock exchange would be well served to do that. And I know some of the heads of the investment bank are uncomfortable with these dual roles they face. So that's an important step. It's certainly not the only step. And I think there could be this resist reform movement you talk about. But I think that there's a good chance that under John Reed's leadership, the board, having been awakened here, will step up and recognize it's very important for the stock exchange to govern itself, or else the SEC will take over, and they're already doing investigation of the specialists. So I think that's very much in question now. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Tony. Go ahead.
May I ask, since it is a semi-statutory operation, should not the board likewise be semi-statutory?
Well, that's a good point. I would argue that since it does have some mandated public regulatory authority, it has never had a public representative on the board, independent of the street itself. And although I have no problem with having more independent directors on the board, whether or not they can function independently, of course, is another question, given the important culture of the street. But more significantly, our last stab at this was 70 years ago. So we're dealing with a regulatory environment that was superimposed 70 years ago in what we would almost look back on now as a horse and buggy era of securities transactions. And in the year 2003, those have not been updated. So we need to take a big look if we want to really tackle this problem, and not so much look at the question as to whether or not the SEC will do everything or the NYSE will do everything, but what is the appropriate mix and the appropriate blend of regulatory authority in public hands, and what is the appropriate mix that leaves a segment at the New York Stock Exchange.
Well, I think that's right, Howard. And I think with Bill Donaldson of the SEC having been the former chair of the New York Stock Exchange, we're going to get that kind of objective look. And I think it is timely. I'm not sure we want a total change, or I certainly don't think everything should go over to the federal government. But I do think a look at these issues would be very helpful.
Tony, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
A couple of informational questions by email. Barbara Nelson in Minneapolis wants to know, does the New York Stock Exchange have a statement of values or ethics, and do you think these kinds of statements have any real effect on how our group does business? Howard Wachtel?
I suspect they do, but I guess I haven't seen it. And whether or not they have an effect on how business is done, I must say I remain a skeptic.
Okay. David from Kansas City asks, and I guess this follows up on what Tony was talking about a minute ago, would you please ask your guest to characterize the members of the board of the New York Stock Exchange? What are their backgrounds? What do they bring to the board? He recalls that Ms. Albright, the former Secretary of State, sits on the board. Bill George, who are these people?
Well, we have the heads of many of the major banks, Bill Harrison of J.P. Morgan Chase, Hank Paulson of Goldman Sachs, the heads of John Mack of Credit Suisse First Boston. So we're the heads of many of those firms, and we have former CEOs like Jerry Levin, the former head of Time Warner, and of course, the former New York controller, Carl McCall. So a pretty diverse group of people, all of whom are quite distinguished in public life, that are sitting on this board. But many of them have real interests. Several of them are actually representatives of the exchange or specialists who have served on the floor and have bought positions. I think there are three people in that position. So a lot of them have a deep interest in the exchange's success.
You were mentioning a minute ago the horse and buggy days. Some people would say we're in the horse and buggy days now. Long before the uproar began at the stock exchange on compensation, the country's top financial regulatory agency, the Securities and Exchange Commission, was looking into ways to revamp the structure of U.S. stock markets. And one of the proposals is to go to fully electronic trading. Joining us now from her office here in Washington to tell us about electronic trading is Wall Street Journal staff writer Deborah Solomon. And good of you to join us on Talk of the Nation.
Thanks.
Now, as I understand it, the New York Stock Exchange is the only market in the world left that still uses human beings to match buyers and sellers?
Well, it's one of. It's rare in the U.S. It's the only one with the open outcry system where you have people on the floor, human beings, matching bids and offers. It's rare in the U.S.
How is it done in other stock markets?
Well, you have the NASDAQ stock market, which is just a federation of traders using computers to connect to one another. You've got the ECNs, which are electronic communications networks, which are electronic network systems that basically collect, post, and post bids and offers and match orders electronically. It's all done via computers and links, and nobody ever meets. Nobody, you know, gets to see anybody's face, and it's all done, you know, in cyberspace.
Well, speed then sounds like a big advantage to the electronic system.
Well, that is a big advantage. That's their business model. I mean, they say that since they can do things electronically, things can happen instantaneously. When you go on an ECN and you execute an order, it's done instantaneously. NASDAQ is just as almost as fast, if not as fast. It's slower on the New York Stock Exchange because you have human beings involved. Not always. I mean, sometimes it can go just as quickly. You can have a second or 2 seconds, but sometimes it can take 30 seconds. Sometimes it can take 2 minutes. It really depends because you've got people who can intervene and get involved, and that's good and that's bad.
Well, what's the advantage of that human factor?
Well, the New York Stock Exchange says that the advantage is that they're humans, they're specialists, know the nuances of the market better than a computer does, and so they can know when to intervene. They can also, they're also there. They do serve an important function, which is if nobody wants to buy a stock, their job is to get involved. If nobody wants to sell, they can buy. If nobody wants to buy, they can sell. You know, they help keep the market moving. That's something that the ECNs don't have, or NASDAQ.
Now, given that, how serious is the SEC and its head, William Donaldson, who used to be the head of the New York Stock Exchange before Mr. Grasso was, how serious are they in putting electronic trading in place at the New York Stock Exchange, do you think?
Well, I mean, I think we're a ways away from seeing that happen. I think what the SEC is concerned about is twofold. One is they're concerned that there's too much fragmentation, which is that there are just too many different places to trade stocks and that it's obscured the true price of a stock. You've got all these different marketplaces now. You've got fees in some marketplaces. You've got regulations that aren't the same, you know, for an ECN as they are for a stock exchange. And it's confusing broker-dealers. It's confusing investors. They want to get sort of more a level playing field. They want to have more sort of centralized rules. That doesn't bode well for the NASDAQ and ECN models, which are sort of predicated on this sort of vast, far-flung network. But on the other side, you've got sort of this idea that you want to have electronic communications working, and that speed is important, especially to day traders, to hedge funds, and just to regular investors who want to have their trades executed quickly. Especially now, we've got decimalization, which means we trade in penny increments. We're not trading in eighths or sixteenths, so the spread isn't as wide anymore. So if you wait, you know, for a better price, it might just be a penny or two, which isn't as important as say 12 cents. So the SEC is considering, you know, what to do about these issues. It's going to be a while. I mean, over the next 6 to 12 months, they're going to take a look at what the problems are and what the best solution is. But by no means are they ready to say, you know, the New York Stock Exchange has to become an electronic market.
We're discussing the future of the New York Stock Exchange, and our guests are Deborah Solomon, who's with the Wall Street Journal, Howard Wachtel, author of The Street of Dreams, and Bill George, whose most recent book is I've lost track of your book, Bill. What's the most recent book?
Authentic Leadership.
There you go. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. On the question of electronic marketplaces, Howard Wachtel, what do you think? Is this going to happen soon?
Well, I hope not. In this way, I'm a traditionalist. Just one bit of history. From the very beginning, the New York Stock Exchange and the system on the lower end of Manhattan was unique in that they cleared all transactions overnight. It wasn't until 1986 that the British moved from a two-week clearing towards an overnight clearing. So there were hundreds and thousands of people involved in the mid-19th century, runners, pad shovers, who spent overnight taking little bits of paper here and there. And the one thing one can say about this is it's been a remarkably efficient operation. And today, the system works. I believe the New York Stock Exchange has an 80% market share, handles huge volumes of transactions. They're cleared overnight. There hardly ever seems to be an error or a problem, so it seems to me it's not broke. So I don't understand why all the concern about this issue, except the fad of technology. And we've all just been through here in Washington, D.C., several days in which all of our electricity has been down. We all know when we turn on our computers in the morning, we pray that it will blip for us. We all worry now about identity theft and hackers breaking into the systems. I think that this is a nightmare if we march down this road. in something as important as the New York Stock Exchange.
You know, I think, Neil, there's another issue here, and that's the future of self-regulation. Howard mentioned that earlier, but if our self-regulatory bodies don't do their job and they become so much in their self-interest, then we're going to have more government regulation. And I think that's the bigger issue here, is whether these self-regulatory bodies will really work. We saw after the failure of Arthur Andersen the problems in the accounting fraternity, and now we're seeing it on the stock exchange. And I think that's why it's so important that this board of the New York Stock Exchange step up to that responsibility and to ensure the proper level of self-regulation, or else those powers will devolve to the federal government.
Deborah Solomon, I wanted to thank you for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thanks.
Deborah Solomon is a staff writer at the Wall Street Journal. She was with us from her office here in Washington. Before we let you gentlemen go, use our last couple of minutes to discuss this email question from Elizabeth in Menlo Park, California. I'm concerned with the $1 annual compensation for the interim chairman CEO for the New York Stock Exchange. It seems the pendulum has swung drastically in the opposite direction. Shouldn't accountability be tied to effective and competitive compensation in an effort to bring more credibility to the public? I understand the interim chair is financially sound, but I'm not confident with the message that this compensation is sending. Bill George, get a quick response from you.
I think it's a very noble thing John Reed has done. He said, I don't want compensation to affect this at all, and I'm willing to donate my time and the public interest now and in the future to try to get this resolved, and I think that's a very generous thing he's done. I don't think anyone thinks if they go out and hire or promote a new head of the New York Stock Exchange that person would be expected to work for zero. I just think it's a noble thing that John Reed has done here to take away that issue, because he knows he doesn't need that becoming an issue in terms of his motivation.
And Howard Wachtel, of course, this harkens back to all of the executives who went to work during the Second World War for the administration, dollar a year man.
That's right. I'm glad he's doing it. On the other hand, you know, in one way, Dick Grasso's one problem was, I guess, he cashed the checks. I mean, he wasn't the one who wrote them, and he wasn't the one who decided on them, and he went and cashed them. I have a lot of sympathy and mixed emotions for Grasso. I mean, that's what he did. I guess Reed can go out and buy a third of a hot dog on the street with his one-year salary.
Well, maybe I'd hold on the kraut anyway. Howard Wachtel, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Howard Wachtel is an economics professor at American University, the author of Street of Dreams, Boulevard of Broken Hearts, Wall Street's First Century. He was with us here in Studio 3A. And Bill George, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Neil.
Bill George, a former CEO of Medtronic. His book is called Authentic Leadership, Rediscovering the Secrets to Creating Lasting Value. He was with us from the studios of member station KQED in San Francisco. When we come back from a short break, NPR's Nina Totenberg will join us for a look at the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals as it gets ready later this afternoon to rethink the recall election. Yes, the California recall case is before the Ninth Circuit. 11 members of the court will be sitting live on TV as they consider the arguments. We'll get the pregame show with Nina Totenberg after a short break. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.